So a fun thing happened this past weekend here. Actually, a couple weekends ago now. We were up working on fixing some stuff up on the boat. And I've had a light that's been bugging me. I couldn't get working. So I had to rerun a ground wire for that. But got that fixed finally.
Okay.
And this season, we put in a new radio with a system called AIS, Automated Identification System. So what that lets us do is it lets us see boats, you know, other freighters in the water. Let's us be able to call direct to them, you know, see their projected course so that they're not, you know, make sure they're not going to hit us if we're going somewhere. Problem is, I had to do some wiring on it to make that talk to the GPS unit. So I went over, I checked everything out 5, 6, 7 times, couldn't get it working to save my life. Getting very, very angry with myself. So I talked to one of the local guys who's good with wiring. And he says, yeah, I'll come over, take a look. And this gentleman, Kevin is his name, comes over, sits at the helm station and looks back and forth, reaches behind the radio and just kind of plays with it. It starts beeping. It starts working.
Okay.
I spent an hour and a half with a voltmeter pinpoint testing every single thing I could think of in the entire system, but I forgot to check the tightness of the connector going to the GPS.
It was just loose?
Yeah.
Was it like a bolt-on connector or something?
Thread-on. I didn't thread it in. You had to push the connector in, thread it in, and then do that again. I didn't do it the second time, apparently, so it was a few threads loose and not making enough connection. So I spent an hour and a half in a very cramped, tiny space with a small, dim headlight running a voltmeter for nothing.
Well, that actually kind of is it's a great, you know, lesson.
Yeah, always check every connection.
Well, even just like going out in the trail, you want to check your entire rig out and the things that you're carrying with you to be prepared for your trail ride.
True.
And
most
I think
importantly, you want to know who you're going with. In our case, I'm Johnny Orange.
And I'm Keith. And we're going to talk about being prepped for your off-road trip today.
It's time to hit the trail, lock in those hubs, and throw it into low range. Because you are listening to Wheelin' with Keith and Johnny Orange, broadcasting from the Thin Line Off-Road Studio. They're here to talk about 4x4s, trucks, and everything to do with enjoying the great outdoors. Buckle up. Here's your hosts, Keith and Johnny Orange.
Okay, John, so you learned a lesson with that AIS system on the boat there.
Yep.
John was talking about marine stuff there because he works for an outfit that does, they take people out to go scuba diving on wrecks in the Great Lakes. So, but we're going to talk about getting your rig ready for the trail. I have got lots of trail stories, and I'm sure John's got some too, about things that you need to carry with you. So, John, you've got a nice big fat list over there sitting there. And that's actually what you want to have. You want to have a list. You want to write down the things you need to do to get ready to take your big first trip or your fifth trip or your 500th trip. You need to always pack certain things and have your rig in certain condition. So what's the top of your list here, John?
Well, there's a lot of different things to consider when you're going, you know, where you're going, how far you're going to be out. So this is by no means an all-inclusive list. I mean, you could make one, you know, a short list for a day trip. You can make a trip to last a week. I mean, the variety of things you can bring is immense. And you don't need all of this.
You know, but there's some basics that you should have on every trip.
Absolutely. And you know, the number one thing is probably going to be recovery gear. So if you get stuck somewhere, you need somebody to pull you out. If you need to use a winch to pull yourself out, there's a few different things you're going to want to be able to use with that.
So at bare minimum, probably a snatch strap, like a 20-foot, 30-foot. They're like an elastic type strap specifically meant for pulling vehicles out of the mud. They have some stretch to them.
Yeah.
And we're not going to talk about like the safety of those. And right now we'll talk about trail safety in a different time. But you should have a snatch strap at least, or potentially a winch. So having both is best.
Absolutely.
But of course, you need a safe place to tie them down too.
Yeah. So you're going to make sure you have some solid recovery points to pull from.
front and rear.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, if it's as simple as a hitch receiver and a D-ring that you can put a strap loop through, I mean, that counts as a solid point.
It does. It does. You definitely want to make sure that things are solidly mounted to the frame, welded, bolted. You know, none of this chintzy, you know, a couple of 3/8 bolts things. You need to make sure that it's really solid.
I've seen those break. It's not fun.
No, there's been deaths on the trail. So,
yeah.
What's the next thing on your list there?
A lot of it's, again, going to depend, you know, time of day you're going. But if you're stuck out there late at night, you're going to want some lights. You know, at least primary, maybe a backup. Just in case.
Yeah, like flashlights and, yeah.
I mean, worst come to worst, you could use candles. Hopefully it's not too windy or raining where you're at. And that's something you always want to be able to see what you're doing. Or if you got to walk back on a long trail, then you're going to want some light.
Yeah, lights. Going back to kind of the necessities, the things you really should be taking with you, one of the things that I've seen on the trail multiple times is people that don't have a spare tire.
Oh, yeah.
Or they don't have a spare tire that matches the tire. So they've got a Jeep that originally had 31s on it. They're now running 33s, and they're still carrying a 31-inch spare.
Yeah.
That's going to cause axle issues getting it off the trail. You need to have a spare that is within 2 inches. In fact, most sanctioned trail rides through associations and clubs, they'll tell you need to have a spare that's either the same size as what you have on your vehicle or within 2 inches of your spare. So, like, for example, my Land Cruiser out there, we've got a 37-inch Boggers on it, and we run a 36-inch TSL, I think. No, it's a Groundhog, 36-inch Groundhog spare. So
at least get you off the trail, though.
Yeah, it's close enough.
That's the biggest thing. And that, you know, fixed flat and all that only goes so far.
Yeah, and it doesn't work very well if your beat is full of mud and all of that.
And generally, by the time you need that, you're probably too late for it.
Speaking of which, changing tires, having a jack.
Absolutely.
And proper wrench to be able to do it. You need to be able to change tire. And, you know.
Yeah, some basic hand tools at least.
Most of the time, the factory jack that came with your vehicle is going to be completely useless in a muddy situation.
I need to replace mine.
Something like a high lift jack with a base or even a chunk of wood that you throw under your back seat that'll give you a little bit of traction.
Yeah.
You know, keep that in mind. Practice out in your own backyard or, you know, somewhere nearby, taking a tire off out in the bush and see exactly what you need for your vehicle specifically.
Mm. Always a good idea. Know what you have and how to use it.
And you mentioned tools. You know, do you have tool specifics on your list over there? That
I don't have specifics just because there's so many different things to carry. Obviously, you want a lug wrench. It's going to fit your lug nuts to get the tire off.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a scissor-type jack, you need to have something that'll turn it.
A couple of screwdrivers, pliers.
And crescent wrenches.
Believe it or not, with trail rigs, a hammer comes in often handy. You know, you got something that's bent and you need to, you know, so a lot of times I'll carry a 3-pound hand sledge in my tool bag. So that's and then something that I think is very, very important that is all too often overlooked is if you get familiar enough with your vehicle and you are familiar enough to work on your vehicle, most vehicles out there have one or two little knickknacks on them that take a special tool.
Yes.
And, you know, if that's something that could potentially fail on the trail, carrying that special tool with you is not such a bad idea.
Well, no, that might just get you out of a bind that you didn't see coming.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't even know. And sometimes even carrying a special tool that doesn't weigh that much or doesn't take up a lot of space in case somebody else needs it is not such a bad idea.
That too, yeah.
Weirdly enough, I used to wheel with this little Suzuki Samurai with a toolbox in the back, and I always had my ball joint press in the bottom of the toolbox. Mm. In hindsight, it was a heavy tool to be carrying around.
Yeah, they weigh a little bit.
But at least twice on the trail, that thing got used by somebody else. One guy needed to use it to press out a U-joint that was seized in, and another guy used it to actually replace a ball joint.
Nice. So I've done that with a number of my toolkits. I have stuff not necessarily that I may need, but that somebody else may need.
Yeah, exactly. One of my other favorites is basic electrical stuff. So a spool of wire.
Yep. Electrical tape, of course.
Electrical tape, some crimpers. And then what I do in my trail bag on my cruiser out there, I've got a little tin. It carried something. I think maybe it came from cheese or something. I don't know. But it's a small container.
Probably an Altoids.
Yeah, Altoids tin, something like that. And it is full of various electrical connectors. I got some crimp connectors in there. I've got some spades, you know, different things like that. Just a whole handful of little electrical connectors, because you never know. And there's been a number of times I've dove into that to grab that one little butt connector or whatever that's
absolutely.
In there. So yeah, that's really important. What else? I think that's pretty good for the toolkit. I mean, there's always hand wrenches, like I said, crescent wrenches. You know, like we talked before, my old Samurai I used to wheel with, you could take that whole thing apart with like four wrenches.
Oh yeah.
So,
seen it.
carrying a 10 millimeter, 12 millimeter, a 14 and a 17 with me, I could take apart most of that vehicle.
Yeah.
So it really wouldn't make much sense for me to carry around a set of standard wrenches unless I was going to help somebody else.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're driving a completely foreign vehicle, you know, carry metric tools. If you're driving an older American vehicle, make sure you've got a good selection of American sizes or you know, Imperial sizes. You got to have something else. I see you're reading something down
there. Oh, yeah. I've got a whole bunch of stuff. I didn't put a lot of this in order, so just kind of hit it as we go.
Yeah.
Another big one a lot of people overlook, jumper cables or one of those portable jump packs.
Yeah, that's in fact, I've been in that situation myself. Was wheeling northern Canada way up in the northern bush, probably about 10 years ago, and I had a S15 Jimmy on one ton axles. And my starter went out, and we ended up getting a starter and putting in it. And a little bit later, I found out there was some, I don't remember exactly what was going on, but right after my starter went out, my alternator went out, and we were really back in the bush, and that was a fuel injected truck, and it would run for about an hour on a full charge, and then the battery was dead with nothing else running. So we would pull over, we would throw jumper cables on it because we were probably 4 hours into the bush, and we'd let it, you know, just idle off of another vehicle for about 10 minutes till the battery was charged up enough, and we got back to the trailhead that way.
Hey, whatever you got to do.
Yeah, so jumper cables is not a bad idea. You can also, now I would only recommend this to somebody that really knows what they're doing, okay, but it's a MacGyver thing. Two pairs of jumper cables and a little bit of welding rod, you can actually weld out on the trail. And I've done that before. The welds are not pretty, but it takes them, I think it's 1030 rod. I could be, maybe, you know.
1060.
1060, okay. So you take the two batteries. You put the jumper cables, so you take one battery, you take them out of the vehicle. You don't leave them in the vehicle for this. You take two vehicle batteries out. You take the positive to the negative with one cable from a jumper cable, and then you take the positive and negative from the opposite batteries now. So now you have 24 volts, and you ground whatever you're working on, and you put the hot on your welding rod, and you can weld with it. It's not pretty. It is not pretty, but it will get you off the trail. And I've seen that that trail repair done a couple times now, and I've done it once myself.
I've never done it, but I've read in a couple of these things during researching. I mean, worst come to worst, you can use nickels, too.
Yeah, I've seen somebody try that before, but it didn't. I think you have to use older nickels or something. I'm not
probably.
It's got higher nickel content. I think the new ones are mostly steel or something.
Something to that effect. I'm gonna just stick with welding rod though. I've got plenty of that.
Yeah, so having a little tube and just throwing a couple of welding rods. You said 1060 on that.
I believe it is. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I have those two pairs of jumper cables. As long as you got two batteries, either in your own rig or one in yours or one in your buddy's rig, you can do some welding.
Yeah. Another big thing you mentioned, you guys are up in the bush in Canada. You always want to have some sort of navigation, be it a map and a compass or a GPS, know where you're at and how to get somewhere at least.
Yeah, that's very important.
Especially if you're not familiar with the area.
Yeah, that same area on a different trip, we ended up getting lost for about 4 hours once, where we ended up, because our map that we had was fairly inaccurate and we didn't really have a good working GPS with us, so that probably would have gotten us out of that a little quicker. That's definitely wherever you're at. You want to run. And now, speaking of that, if you're going to be off the trail for hours or potentially even days with a breakdown or something like that, bringing spare water to drink, some spare food. So one of the great things that's good for throwing in the back of a truck that might get mud and whatnot is you buy those military MREs, those mil-specs. You know, throw four or five of those in the back. They're pretty light, waterproof,
complete,
complete, got everything you need there.
Yeah.
That's a great thing to take. And this is one that I use, but of course the ladies appreciate it too. A roll of toilet paper.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's on my list.
Yeah, is it? Okay,
it actually is. And a shovel, in case you need to dig a latrine.
Yeah, yeah, doing that. Or the shovel even for digging out if you, you know, with the, we've
stuck
done
in
that
the
number
sand
of times.
Or soft metal or soft material.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, as far as the water, I know the general recommendation on that is 1 gallon per person per day.
Yeah.
So that can add up. Or, alternatively, you can use one of those water purification systems, the tablets in a you know, canteen or container of some sort.
Yeah, I used to carry the tablets with me.
Yeah.
We would do a lot of wheeling up in Canada. There's water sources everywhere, but you still needed to purify it just in case you needed
it. Worst come to worst, keep a pan in there and boil it.
Exactly.
Might not taste the greatest, but it'll be clean. Well, safer.
Exactly. What do you think, John? Should we take a break?
Sounds like a good idea. Grab something to drink and we'll be right back.
All right.
Have you heard the good news? Now there's a local paper that people just can't seem to get enough of. It's the Thumbprint News. The Thumbprint News is free and full of interesting stories that focus on what's important in our lives. Stories that touch on this area's rich history, unique places, and the diverse cultures and people. You'll be in the know when you read the Thumbprint News. Go to thumbprintnews.com and read the paper online for free today.
Welcome back to Wheelin' with Johnny Orange and Keith. I do want to back up real quick. We mentioned, I know we could talk a whole thing about safety gear. There's three important things I want to hit on, though.
Okay.
Especially when you're winching, this is good to have. Pair of safety glasses, good pair of gloves, probably leather.
And definitely leather,
a mat or a blanket of some sort.
What's the mat or the blanket for?
Well, when you're winching, you have a lot of stress on that cable. Even synthetic rope or the wire rope, you want to have something on it so if it snaps, it's going to absorb a lot of that and hopefully not hit anybody.
Of course. And if you don't have one of those, if you got like a heavy Carhartt jacket or something like that, you can throw that over the winch cable.
Yeah, I've seen the synthetic ropes pop, and it's not good.
Well, the synthetics tend to kind of lay down. The cables,
that one did not.
Okay, yeah. The cable, steel cable, really can make a mess.
Yeah.
And for hooking up, you're going to be most likely hooking up to a tree if you're out on the trail. Hmm. And you need to hook up with a tree saver.
Yes.
A tree saver is a rigid strap. It's not a toe strap. But it wraps around the tree, then with a shackle, or typically just you put your hook into the eyelets on the tree saver towards the base of the tree so you don't do any damage to the tree.
Yeah.
In an absolute pinch, and this is not proper form whatsoever, but in an absolute pinch, if for some reason you lost your tree saver, you left it back on the trail, hooked to another tree, and you forgot about it, I've done that twice, so speaking from experience here,
nice.
You can wrap a snatch strap a couple times around this tree and use it as a tree saver. That is only in a worst case situation because they are not rated for that kind of pulling.
Yeah.
And there is stretch there. So that can actually be a dangerous situation. You definitely would want to throw some jackets and keep people far away from what you're doing.
Yeah.
But it would still be better than wrapping the cable around the tree and killing the tree.
Yeah, absolutely. What is it they always say? Leave no trace.
Yeah, leave no trace. Yeah. Leave the trail cleaner than you found it, that kind of thing.
And that's another thing, another safety thing to hold on to, a basic first aid kit at least. Something with some bandages, maybe some cleaner, antiseptic cleaner or something.
Even one of those tourniquet kits is not
absolutely
a bad idea.
Absolutely,
That's definitely a good idea to do that. Speaking, going back just a second there on keeping the trail clean, a couple of garbage bags.
Yep.
You know, you're out on the trail and, you know, your own garbage,
mm-hmm.
along with if you find anything on the trail, be responsible, pick it up, throw in a garbage bag.
Yep. Absolutely.
So I'm looking over your list there, you know, over your shoulder, which one you wanted to move over to next to.
I don't know how you can read it. My handwriting's pretty terrible.
Yeah, it's about as bad as mine, so.
Yeah. Another one, you know, fire starter. Of some sort, be it a lighter, matches, you know, some tinder for that, or even a flint striker.
Or Drew Barrymore.
I mean, maybe on that, but, you know, if you're stuck out in the woods for a long time and it gets cold at night, you know, some of those places get really cold when sun goes down, so you want to be able to start a little fire, keep warm.
That's, of course, if it's allowed, but if it's survival, even if you're in an area, you don't want to be lighting fires if you know, there's a fire watch going on.
Absolutely, yeah. Good point.
But in a survival mode, you're going to have to. So carrying some matches with you. Matches tend to get wet. Of course, there's waterproof matches. Different types of lighters. Great. One of the best things is just a couple cheap, like, Bic lighter.
Oh, yeah.
Throw a couple of them in your glove box.
I actually keep a few of those Flint Strikers in there. That and some napkins or toilet paper, something wadded up. Fires right up every time.
Yeah. And if you're out stuck on the trail, you're not always in cell phone range. In fact, in many areas, you're not. So it's getting better in the U.S., of course, but there's still many areas where you're not in cell phone range. So but you might be, so carry a cell phone charger with you.
Yeah.
You know, make sure that you've got a working cigarette lighter or auxiliary port in your rig and a working charger so you can charge up your phone. And it's not a bad idea to have your rig set up with a CB radio or even better, a ham radio if you have a ham radio license.
Absolutely. They make those small handheld units now, and they have an incredible range for such a small device.
The ham radios are getting much more popular on the trails. Many, many people out there that are in the off-roading world are now into ham radios as well. Yeah. I don't have a license yet myself. Probably should get one eventually. I think our producer Andrew down there has one.
He does. We could probably actually do a special on off-road communications one day.
Maybe get him to talk for once. Absolutely. Get him on the microphone. I think that's a good idea.
Absolutely.
We could do that. So communication devices, something that's not a bad idea as well. Is some sort of flare that you can shoot in the sky, like a marine type flare.
Yeah.
This is something that a lot of people don't ever think about, but quite often if you're on a trail somewhere, you might be in a wooded area where there's just a very narrow gap opening between, where you're at and the sky. Mm. So you might be between the woods, even if you have to get to a high ground area, if there's an emergency situation and you need to, signal a helicopter for medevac or something like that, a flare that you can shoot up into the sky is not a bad idea. They have the marine, like handgun type ones. Mm-hmm. They have other ones, I believe, that you just crack off the end of them and hit something, and then they go off their one-time use.
They have ones, we got to play with some old expired ones last year, and there's one, same thing. You pop the cap, you point it, and you pull a tab.
Yeah.
And it just flies out.
So even just one of those in your toolbox, not a bad idea.
Yep. See what else we got on here. Another type we mentioned, like a high lift jack and a winch. I mean, if you're on a little bit more of a budget, you can use a come along even. I mean, they have mechanical ones. I've been half a mile out in the woods, and that was all we were able to get back. There was chain straps and a come along. Yeah, I mean, we were out there 3-4 hours, but we got it out.
Yeah.
So
that's something, in your local community or maybe in the next state over, there are events and there's things called Jeep Jamborees, but there's all sorts of events. If you're on Facebook, on 4x4 groups that are nearby to you, or you get on forums, there's a lot of events that you can go to where they teach proper recovery techniques. I think you can actually get certified in recovery now.
I didn't know that.
It's not like it's a card that you need for something, but they do it as a nice little presentation. You pay for this class, and they'll teach you even techniques with ropes and sticks to do man winches. There's a lot of things that you can do. Speaking of rope, there's another thing.
Yeah.
Carrying maybe 30 or 40 feet of even like a clothesline rope. You never know. Something breaks on the rig that you got to tie up. Not the exhaust, of course. For that, you might take some chicken wire with you.
Coat hanger or something.
Coat hanger. Duct tape. Bring duct tape with you,
too. Yep, I definitely have that on my list.
So all those types of things.
I've used that a lot.
You know, that you can do a trail repair with, you know. So think outside the box. You know, what's going to be good for that?
I got one on here. I don't know if you've ever thought to actually take one of these with you. It's an extra piece, spare key.
Actually, I have gotten out of that habit. But what I used to do on all my vehicles, and I don't do this anymore, so if you know where I live, you're not going to steal a vehicle from me anymore. Because now I drive Fords that have the door code on them. But because I used to be terrible at locking myself out of my own vehicle. And so I used to take and have a spare key made, and I would zip tie it or take some chicken wire up under the frame under the vehicle somewhere.
That works.
And so that was there. You know, some of those keys would be there for a year or two before they ever got pulled out. But that's not a bad idea at all, John.
Especially with all the advanced in technology, all these chip keys and key fobs and all that. You can't get in and do anything without it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it never hurts to have it.
You know, on that note, there's another thing that, you know, we mentioned earlier. If you have special tools that you need for your rig to take them with you, if you wheel a vehicle that has special parts that are higher chance of failing, and those parts are not going to be available anywhere nearby at a local auto parts store, say, you know, through one of your big box stores or your local NAPA or something like that, carrying a couple of trail spares with you is not a bad idea. It's real popular in the trail riding circles to carry some spare axle shafts with you. I know that's a big part, so most people aren't going to do that. But even smaller things, for instance, you know, that Jimmy that had the failed alternator.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know at the time, but that one used a style of alternator that was not readily available up there in Canada.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Canadian Tire up there had to order me in the alternator, and it cost me like $300 Canadian.
Ouch.
Back then. You know, for an alternator, there's probably like $80 here in the U.S. Oof. But...
you want to get out, you got to pay it.
You know, but if you're parting out another vehicle or you're down at your local pick and pull junkyard and you can pick up a spare alternator, maybe a spare water pump, a spare starter, these are things that commonly can fail out in the trail. And, you know, throwing them in a box in the back of your rig is not a bad idea. But disclaimer there, if you're going to carry something heavy like an alternator with you, put it in something where it can't fly out and hit you in case of a rollover. In fact, that's a good rule of thumb for anything in your vehicle. Secure it where if you're on the trail and you're going to roll and your vehicle rolls over, nobody expects to roll over. But if you do, you don't want, you know, your cooler falling out and your spare parts and your tool bag and all that. The more stuff that you can secure, however you're going to secure it, whether it be a compartment, locking compartment, or some sort of net, or even a barrier screen.
Even just a tub with a lid.
A tub with a lid. Yeah. I used to, that big orange tub that we carry around our podcasting equipment in, I used to carry that in the back of my Samurai with a bunch of tools in it, and I strapped it down with two small ratchet straps to hooks in the floor.
Nice.
And I actually rolled that Samurai with that tub in the back of it, and everything was fine.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Now you mentioned water pump. Comes to another point I have on the list. If you got carrying something like that, you're going to need fluids. So you want to carry at least some basic extra fluids, be it oil, transmission fluid, coolant, you know, the bare basics at least.
Yeah, that's a really good point, John. Carrying a quart of power steering fluid is a big one too, because power steering systems wheeling tend to overheat and boil over and bubble out a lot.
Yep, brake fluid too.
Yep, so carrying an extra quart of power steering fluid, extra quart of brake fluid with you. Great idea. And then oil and, you know, antifreeze is good. Well, you don't have to have antifreeze. I mean, winter run probably is a good idea, but in the summer, even just having a couple gallons of water.
Oh, yeah, bare minimum,
or put in your radiator.
Yeah, don't drink it after you run it through, though. That's
no.
I mean, if you need coffee, that's hot water, but you could take a pan for that.
sure.
Probably another big one. We're mentioning a lot of these fluids and overheating, a fire extinguisher.
Yeah.
It's probably the biggest one. And I think everybody should have one of those in their vehicle.
It really is a good idea. And in the last few years, there's a number of off-road organizations that do events, and they require everyone to carry a fire extinguisher with them.
I won't go into too much detail out of request of the other individual involved, but there was an incident where I noticed a small fire on the back of a vehicle while we were moving. That particular vehicle happened to have a fire extinguisher on board, and I was able to signal, have him move over so I could get it. And when I got to where the fire was, I was able to just kind of blow it out. Thankfully, it was nothing serious, but there was a small open flame on the back of this vehicle, and it was a vehicle I'm not familiar with, so I don't know where fuel lines are run or anything like that, and I was very glad that extinguisher was there just in case. And that's probably one of the only times I've ever had to do that, but it was there. And yeah. Thank God we didn't need it.
Yeah, that's it's a good thing you were there for sure.
Yeah, that would have been a really bad day.
You know, going back to making sure that your vehicle is prepped and ready for the trail. So
yeah.
Two things that came to mind when we were talking about that. One, no major leaks.
Yeah.
You don't want to be, first, you don't want to be polluting the environment.
Yeah.
But major leaks can also cause fires. And absolutely. So if you're leaking oil or power steering fluid, you need to get that fixed before you hit the trail.
Yeah.
And while you're under the hood, something else to look at is the battery. The battery needs to be tied down. Just setting a battery in a battery tray might work on the street just fine. You roll over, that battery now has hot terminal posts that are hitting metal, most likely, of somewhere.
They've just electrified the whole vehicle.
Yeah. Speaking from experience here, my old Ford truck, 78 Ford years and years ago, battery wasn't tied down. I was going down a very bouncy road. The battery actually flipped over in the battery tray and burned two holes through the bottom of the battery tray.
Oh, wow.
Fortunately, we caught it in time, and that was the extent of the damage, but it could have ended a lot worse.
Absolutely. Yeah, especially that hits a moving part. You get that battery acid flying everywhere if you're not careful.
Exactly. And also, while you're under the hood there, top off your windshield washer reservoir and make sure that it's working. When you're on the trail, there's dust, there's mud, there's all that. So you want to be able to clean off that windshield. Nothing's worse than getting onto a dusty, muddy trail only to find out that you don't have working way to clean your windshield.
Yeah.
And now you're pulling an Ace Ventura and driving down the trail with your head stuck out the side of the door.
That's what the passenger's for.
Well, there's that. Yeah. You know, that's why it's a soft top, right? You stand up while you're going.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you can see
fold the windshield down, you're fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that brings to another point, though. Another big thing you want to check before you go out, your tire pressure.
Yes.
Make sure your tires are in decent shape, no bald spots, and that they're proper pressure.
And if you're going to be airing down,
you got to have a way to fill them up.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're going out on a trail run and you're not trailering and you're driving 4 or 5 hours away to go on this run and you're going to air down to 8, 10, 15 PSI, filling it back up with an onboard air compressor or a CO2 tank are both great ways to do it. Now, John and I have a little ace in the hole on this, and I've been telling people about this for years. Nothing wrong with the CO2 systems that you can buy. Those are great systems, but each fill costs you over $30. A way to save a little bit of money and have a little more adventure, if you're an outdoor adventure guy, is go get scuba certified, and then you rig up a whip off of a first-stage scuba regulator, and now you've got the same PSI that you would have with a CO2 tank in your air tank, your scuba tank.
And but you get a lot more air.
Yeah, and your fills are only like $7 or $8.
And the other beauty of that, those are usually regulated about 140 PSI, which means you can run air tools off that.
And I have many times. You've seen me do that.
Yep.
Yep. So,
and you don't necessarily have to get scuba certified for that. You go to a local dive shop, tell them you're using it like for paintball or off-roading. A lot of them will have stickers you can put on the tank so that you can get fills. Knowing that it's for that use.
That's gonna be a shop-by-shop basis and
absolutely.
Local regulations. So you're going to have to check locally with that. But it is a somewhat cheaper way instead of doing the CO2 thing. Although I love the power tank systems and what they're doing with them. I know they're a big supporter of Great Lakes Four-Wheel Drive Association, and they've given away a lot of power tanks over the years. So
they're definitely cool systems. I like the big carry handle those have.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to mention that. The big hard plastic carry handle makes it a little easier. So. I know we're not done with that list, but do you think we need to take another break yet? Or
probably a good idea. Take a little break.
Why don't
get
we do
breather,
that?
Get another beverage, and we'll go from there.
All right. Sounds good.
See you in a bit.
Hey, it sounds like it's time to swap out that old engine for something better, John.
Yeah, man, but I have so much into my trans and transfer case set up already. I don't want to change those too.
Sounds like you need to call Quick Draw Brand Adapters. They specialize in conversion bell housings for nearly all diesel and gasoline engines, including the new 2.8R Cummins.
You know, I like weird engines, though. I want something different.
Then you definitely need to visit quickdrawbrand.com today. They have those hard-to-find parts. They also have used diesel engines available. You can call them at 513-446-9654.
Cool, I'll do that. See what they have. Thanks.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Keith, and I'm sitting across from Johnny Orange. He is looking at his list of all the things you need to do to make sure that your rig is ready to go wheeling. So, John, where did we need to, or where do we leave off? Where do we need to pick up again?
Well, I said it's kind of an unorganized list, but I've got another one that's never a bad idea to have. And one variation of another, some sort of cutting device. Just be it an axe or a saw.
Yeah.
You got something, tree falls on you or something. I mean, if a tree falls in the woods, I mean, if it hits your vehicle, it's going to make a noise.
Yeah, there you go. We've carried chainsaws with us. Now, that's a little cumbersome, but if you do, you need to carry your gas, you need to carry all that. One of the things that I think is a great tool is one of those folding buck saws.
Oh, yeah.
They've got a 12 to 14 inch blade. Very compact. They tuck into a door pocket, something, you can cut through a 4 inch, even bigger. You can cut through some pretty massive stuff with those. They are great for that.
Yeah. I carry an axe in my Jeep and I've used it several times for that very reason. Going through a trail in the backwoods, come up a tree. Well, I mean, they're going backwards up a hill in a very tight spot. Or I'm going to spend a few minutes and just get it out of the way, clear the trail for me and everybody behind me.
Sure.
And it's saved me more than a few times.
Yeah, we'll talk about proper trail stewardship when you're out there not cutting down things that are unnecessary to
cut down.
Absolutely,
you want to be very respectful.
Yeah, we're talking about a situation where maybe you're going along and all of a sudden there's a stick that went up into your grill and you have to remove that. That's when you do those saws.
Yeah.
So that's what you want to be doing. I had on the top of my mind something else. I was going to mention briefly that a lot of time folks are trailering their rigs to the trail, and that brings in its whole set of needs, such as proper straps and other types of things that you need to do and trailer functions. I think the towing episode needs to be done separately, though.
Yeah,
I think probably. We need to do a towing episode.
Definitely could.
So, that's why we're not going to talk about that much. We're talking about rigs that you may have towed there or you may have driven there.
And
these are good things to keep in mind for whether you tow or drive. When you're on the trail, you still need to be doing these things we're talking about.
Yeah.
You had to have something else on that list over there, John.
You mentioned carrying MREs. Or some sort of food. It's never a bad idea to carry a few basic cooking tools. Be a cast iron pan and a leather glove, or a tool to move the hot pan off the coals. It gets late at night or something, you want to warm something up. If you need to clean some water to drink, a lot of versatility to having something like that.
Yeah, I have a friend that used to carry a Dutch oven with him in the passenger floor of his Jeep, and he would prepare a meal in the morning, and he would get it going. That's a little on the extreme end.
Yeah, that's towards the advance. So I just kind of compiled a list of everything I could think of, that you may need or may want to have with it. Another thing, a tarp.
Oh, totally forgot about that one. Yeah, tarp, and people go, what do you need tarp for? Well, you can use it as a shelter. You can use it to cover a Jeep that doesn't have a top on it. But most importantly, if you've got to lay under that thing and change a U-joint.
Absolutely.
and you're in the mud, a tarp is so nice.
I've done that. The vehicle I mentioned that we had to hike, was a quarter mile or half mile back into the woods to, we did not have a tarp.
Oh, that's all not fun.
I had a leather jacket I was wearing at the time, and I unfortunately ruined it. Really nice one.
Yeah.
And I ruined it just crawling around on little stones trying to hook stuff up to it.
Exactly. And speaking of spare parts, while you're under the vehicle, one of the most common spare parts carried is U-joints.
Yeah.
Know what size U-joints your vehicle uses. If it's an all-stock vehicle mostly, you're going to go to your auto parts store and just order the ones for it. But if you've got an axle swap or custom drive shafts, figure out what size U-joints you have. Carry some spare U-joints with you.
And, of course, the tools to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
You can be done with some basic stuff, just more time-consuming. Or, like you said, you can carry a ball joint press. It's not necessarily the right tool, but I've done it.
Something else that, and this is only, going back into the old memory bank for me. I had a instance once when I was on a trip and I was out on the East Coast, and I ended up blowing the U-joint in my truck. And we needed to, on a holiday weekend, we needed to, get this thing done. And every place was closed. And the bolts that were holding the U-joint straps on were seized into the yoke.
Ooh.
And so I needed heat. Now, I didn't bring a set of torches with me, I ended up going into a smoke shop and getting what you would essentially call one of those crackhead lighters.
Oh.
It was one of those ones.
Butane torch?
Yeah, butane nice. Torch, but it blew probably about a 2-inch real wide hot flame.
Hmm.
Biggest butane torch I could find. And that was good enough to heat up the yoke to be able to pull the bolts
nice.
Out. Nice. So though, that's not a bad tool. Plus, it, no, it doubles absolutely. As something to light up.
Absolutely,
and
yeah.
that's if you're talking about packing your rig for the trail, using packing stuff that can double and triple for several things is a good way to be a space saver.
Absolutely,
you know,
you don't necessarily need five different things to do one job.
Exactly.
Oh.
Exactly. I'm trying to think. So we talked about all the recovery gear. We talked about food, water. We've hit recovery points. We've hit a lot of those. Those are all the really, really important things. Some toilet paper and spare tires. Seems like we're missing something.
I got a couple more on the list still.
All right, what do you got?
So a couple things, again, you're in the woods. You're not near home. You're going to want some bug repellent.
Oh, yeah. You know, a lot of folks don't know this about bug repellent, but about the only thing that actually, especially with mosquitoes, the only thing that actually deters them is called DEET. And so if you're looking at bug repellent, most of them has like 90% inert ingredients and they have like 10% DEET in them. You can go to your local camping store and you can get 100% DEET, different brands. I know Coleman's got it. There's other ones as well. 100% DEET, couple of pumps, and it goes much further than your dollar store aerosol stuff.
Oh, yeah. There's another big one. I forget this a lot. You know, I said I work on the weekends near on the water, and I forget sunscreen a lot. And I regret that at the end of every weekend.
Really?
So, yeah.
I thought you were Italian. That's what all that dark olive skin.
Oh, I am. But all the red, you know, above and below the band where my sunglasses goes.
Alrighty.
I get usually several layers of sunburn throughout the season.
Okay.
So I did buy some stuff this year, so I'll be trying that out this weekend.
Okay.
But, you know, something to protect yourself. You know, sunscreen, it's a very important thing.
Speaking,
a lot of people don't realize it.
Speaking of protecting yourself, a lot of times, one of the most popular times for us to go wheeling is spring and fall when we get a lot of mud, we get a lot of water runoff. We can start out the day where it's very nice and it's almost shorts weather and t-shirt weather, and it can be freezing by the end of night. You don't always anticipate being stuck on the trail for 12 hours. Carry warm clothes and dry clothes with you. I can't tell you how many times carrying dry clothes with me after, you know, laying underneath a rig, changing a U-joint out in the middle of nowhere or working on something and then being wet and muddy and being able to just strip those clothes off and throw on something dry and warm, you know, a spare hoodie that packs up, a spare jacket, you know, carry some extra warm clothes with you. You don't have to carry a full sleeping bag and tent and everything with you.
Yeah.
Of course, that's nice if you got the room.
Absolutely.
But just some dry, warm, spare change of clothes.
What is it? If I remember correctly, body heat, or you lose body heat 25 times faster in the water than the air. So you maybe not be submerged, but if it's raining, you're going to get cold fast.
Yeah, that's dry clothes. If you can bring a rain poncho with you, they're not a bad idea either, and has some sort of head covering.
Yeah, worst come to worst, you can use those garbage bags that you got with you, or even cover up with that tarp.
Sure.
And probably, I got one more on here. It's probably not a lot of people carry this. I mean, for longer trips, it's more useful than short trips. Spare fuel, be it gas or diesel. If you get an approved travel can for that, it's not a bad idea.
That's true. That's true. A little bit of, you know, especially, you know the fuel needs of your rig. And
that's
talking about prepping before the trip. So I have been on multiple trips where I've gone, we were planning for a full day trip, and somebody pulls out there and they're like, oh, I've got a third of a tank of fuel. That ain't going to work. Full tank. Top off the tank. You don't know how long you're going to be gone. Full tank of fuel.
Yep.
Make sure that you do that. And, you know, that's a great idea.
Yeah. Nothing worse than getting stuck because you ran out of gas.
Exactly.
Well, let's see what else we got here.
I'm sure you got something there, John. That is one of the longest lists I've seen in a while, but I like it because we're going over
and
some great
things. I ran out of time to finish it. I had more that I was going to put on here, but had to leave.
Oh, okay.
So another one, a little knife, little cutting knife.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, you got the axe, you got the saw, knife, if you got to cut a piece of rope.
Okay.
Or, you know, cut something to turn into a tourniquet even.
Yeah.
I mean, worst come to worst.
Yeah, oh, so. Yeah, that's always a good idea. And so we, man, it seems like you see, there's always seems to be something else.
Oh, yeah.
It almost seems like you need a school bus to pack everything in.
This will never be a complete list. Because if I make the list, you make the list, Andrew makes the list here, somebody could come up and add something else. You know, there's never a for sure list of everything you're ever going to need. There's only a minimum.
Oh, so, yeah.
You know, bare minimum, have this, 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 and this, and go from there. You know, so, a lot of it just comes from experience.
And speaking of experience, if you are going off-roading in an area that is unfamiliar to you, you've never been in that area before, you know, of course, the maps and going with somebody, the buddy system, wheeling mm-hmm. with other vehicles is always a good idea. But even beyond that, it's always intelligent to talk to people that have wheeled that area.
Yeah.
And they can tell you what to expect, you know. And that's going to help you determine what you need to bring with you. Mm. You know, if they tell you that it's a area with a lot of heavy rocks, you know, you might need to air down a little further.
Yeah.
You know, if they tell you it's an area that's got a lot of overgrown brush and, you know, the trail hasn't been run in 5 years, then you definitely want to bring a, like you said, a buck saw or a cutting device with you. So these are things that, you know, you need to pay attention to and ask the locals because they would know.
Absolutely.
And, John, let's take one more break. Normally we take our two breaks during. We're going to take one more quick break here, though.
Sounds good. We'll see you in a bit.
Yep. Ah, spring. It means so many things. Birds, flowers, warmer temperatures, and oh, let's not forget, bugs! Don't let pesky bugs take over your home. Call ABC Home and Commercial Services. They have the solution for your spiders, wasps, box elder bugs, Asian lady beetles, cluster flies, and more. ABC Home and Commercial Services, the best in pests. Call 810-794-5678.
And we're back with Keith and Johnny Orange.
What's going on?
So you said you had one or two things left on your list that you wanted to touch on.
So it's kind of a broad category. And again, a lot of what's going to be in this category is determined by how long you plan to be out there and obviously how long you would be out there. You know, personal items. Talking little soap, deodorant, toothbrush, you know, hand soap if you got to clean up. You know, depending, like, I can't say I'd want to be stuck with you in a vehicle for 6 days without deodorant.
Well, yeah.
I'm sure you feel the same.
Well, yeah, but I wouldn't bring a toothbrush with me. I'd take a teeth brush.
I mean, but you get so much more control with one tooth at a time.
Oh, okay, all right, yeah.
So, I mean, other than that, you know, it's just a general list. Sky's the limit what you can bring. Well, you're really limited to just how much stuff you can pack in your vehicle.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
Well, I think that was a pretty comprehensive list. Did they get everything that was on your bullet points there?
Just about, yeah.
You know, and so if you can think of something that we missed in this episode, we want you to go to our new Facebook group called 4x4 Talk. Please join it. It's a closed group. We're welcoming anyone to go in there that's interested in trucks, 4x4s, off-road vehicles. Join the group. It's already getting to be a pretty decent group, a lot of people in it. So go to the Facebook group, 4x4 Talk, 4x4 Talk. And if you have a suggestion for something else that you should prep for the trail, throw it up there. Let us know. And we might mention it in a future episode. Now, speaking of other episodes, in our last episode, we introduced a bit where we are doing some trivia. And we haven't put a name up for that yet. You know, we might call it truck trivia, 4x4 trivia, something like that. But for right now, we're going to have a prize once again, and this is how it's going to work. We're going to give you a trivia question, and you have to share episode 9. We will put a link on, of course, the 4x4 group and on our Wheelin' page. You need to share episode 9 to your personal Facebook page, but then also in the 4x4 group, there will be a post on there that is going to ask for the answers for the trivia question. We're not going to tell you the answer, or we're not going to tell you the trivia question on the group, so you got to listen to the podcast for it. And our trivia question this week
you can actually dig the answer from one of our old episodes. And we're going to tell you what episode. We're not going to always do that. But you need to go back and listen to the NAPCO episode. That's the history of the NAPCO company that did the four-wheel. It's episode 3. They did the four-wheel drive conversions back in the 50s. So we talked about the personal story of the founder of the NAPCO company. And what we need to know from you is you need to listen to that episode. And you need to tell us what the trade was that the young man who, or the man who started the NAPCO Corporation, learned when he lived in the old country back in Romania. He may have not actually learned that in Romania. It might have been another country. But when he was in Europe, he learned a trade as a young man when he was younger than 18. So what was that trade? You need to tell us what that trade was. First person to get that answer right is going to get a $25 Thin Line Off-Road gift certificate. That can be redeemed at thinlineoffroad.com. You can also redeem it by shopping on eBay at the TLO Parts. So what you might need to do is contact us directly if you want to use that gift certificate. We're also going to give you one of our our decals for Wheel and Radio. And what are you writing over there?
I just got a note.
You got to know. All right.
Yeah, I'll show you in a second here.
Okay, John wants me to mention Power Wagon.
Why? New edition at the Mora.
Oh, okay, well, why don't you
talk about that at all?
You mention it then.
Well, you know more about it than I do.
Okay, so for those of you who follow the Museum of Off-Road Adventure and the Mora, the Facebook page, we have a new edition down there. We just got in last week, the number 12 Power Wagon. This is the earliest Dodge Power Wagon in existence. You can see pictures of it on facebook.com/themoramuseum. So go check that out. Pretty cool piece. And if you're in Clay Township, Michigan, come on down and check it out and see it in person. It's a really, really neat, interesting historical vehicle to check out. Thanks for letting me know that. That was an awkward way of letting me know that, but that was fun. That was all right.
We weren't supposed to call a note out.
Okay, so back to our trivia question. Like you said, go on the 4x4 page for episode 9. After you share it on your personal page, also say on there what the trade was that the founder of the company had learned back in the old country. So a few other quick plugs there. Make sure you go and follow us on Twitter at... what is it, John, again?
At Wheel and Radio.
At Wheel and Radio. So Twitter, at Wheel and Radio. We're, of course, on Facebook at Wheelin, W-H-E-E-L-I-N. That's our regular Facebook page. And the group is 4x4 Talk. Is there any other plugs I'm missing here that we need to put out there today?
I mean, none that I can think of. I mean, the lamp's not plugged in, so you can plug that in so we have light.
All right. Sounds good. Well, sign us off, John.
Thanks for listening, and have a good one, everybody.